Mr. President, it is symbolic that this debate, which may well prove to be a turning point in the fortunes of the United Nations and a decisive factor as to the possible continued existence of this organization, should take place on November 10th. Tonight, 37 years ago, has gone down in history as Kristallnacht, or the Night of the Crystals. This was the night on the 10th of November 1938 when Hitler's Nazi stormtroopers launched a coordinated attack on the Jewish community in Germany, burnt the synagogues in all the cities, and made bonfires in the streets of the holy books and the scrolls of the holy law and the Bible. It was the night when Jewish homes were attacked and heads of families were taken away, many of them never to return. It was the night when the windows of all Jewish businesses and stores were smashed, covering the streets in the cities of Germany with a film of broken glass which dissolved into millions of crystals, giving that night the name Kristallnacht, the Night of the Crystals. It was the night which eventually led to the crematoria and the gas chambers, Auschwitz, Birkenau, Dachau, Buchenwald, Theresienstadt, and others. It was the night which led to the most terrifying Holocaust in the history of man. It is indeed befitting, Mr. President, that this debate, conceived in the desire to deflect the Middle East from its moves towards peace, and born of a deep, pervading feeling of anti-Semitism, should come up for debate on this day, which recalls one of the tragic days in one of the darkest periods of history. It is indeed befitting, Mr. President, that the United Nations, which began its life as becoming the world center of anti-Semitism. Hitler would have felt at home on a number of occasions during the past year, listening to the proceedings in this forum, and above all to the proceedings during the debate on Zionism. Mr. President, it is a sobering reflection indeed to consider to what this body has been dragged down if we are obliged today to contemplate an attack on Zionism. For this attack constitutes not of the foulest type, but also attack in this world body on Judaism, one of the oldest established religions in the world. A religion which has given the world the human values of the Bible, a religion from which two other great religions, Christianity and Islam, sprang. Is it not tragic to consider that we here at this meeting in the year 1975 are contemplating what is a scurrilous attack on a great and established religion which has given to the world the Bible with its Ten Commandments, the great prophets of old, Moses, Isaiah, Amos, the great thinkers of history, Maimonides, Spinoza, Marx, Einstein, many of the masters of the arts, and as high a percentage of the Nobel Prize winners in the world, in the sciences, in the arts, in the humanities, as has been achieved by any other people on earth. One can but ponder and wonder at the prospect of countries which consider themselves to be part of the civilized world, joining in this first organized attack on an established religion since the Middle Ages. Yes, Mr. President, to these depths are we being dragged down by those who proposed this resolution to the Middle Ages. The resolution before the Third Committee was originally a resolution condemning racism and colonialism, a subject in which consensus could have been achieved, a consensus which is of great importance to all of us and to our African colleagues in particular. However, instead of this being permitted to happen, a group of countries, drunk with the feeling of power inherent in the automatic majority, and without regard to the importance of achieving a consensus on this issue, railroaded the committee in a contemptuous manner by the use of the automatic majority into bracketing Zionism with the subject under discussion. Indeed, it is difficult to speak of this base move with any measure of restraint. Mr. President, I do not come to this rostrum to defend the moral and historic values of the Jewish people. They do not need to be defended. They speak for themselves. They have given to mankind much of what is great and eternal. They have done for the spirit of man more than can readily be appreciated by a forum such as this one. I come here to denounce the two great evils which menace society in general and a society of nations in particular. These two evils are hatred and ignorance. These two evils are the motivating force behind the proponents of this resolution and their supporters. These two evils characterize those who would drag this world organization, the idea of which was first conceived by the prophets of Israel, to the depths to which it has been dragged today. The key to understanding Zionism lies in its name. In the Bible, the easternmost of the two hills of ancient Jerusalem was called Zion. The period was the 10th century before Christ. In fact, the name Zion appears 152 times in the Old Testament, referring to Jerusalem. The name is overwhelmingly a poetic and prophetic designation. The religious and emotional qualities of the name arise from the importance of Jerusalem as the royal city and the city of the temple. Mount Zion is the place where God dwells, according to the Bible. Jerusalem or Zion is the place where the Lord is king, according to Isaiah, and where he has installed his king David, as quoted in the Psalms. King David made Jerusalem the capital of Israel almost 3,000 years ago, and Jerusalem has remained the capital ever since. During the centuries, the term Zion grew and expanded to mean the whole of Israel. The Israelites in exile could not forget Zion. The Hebrew psalmist sat by the waters of Babylon and swore, "If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget its cunning." This oath has been repeated for thousands of years by Jews throughout the world. It is an oath which was made over 700 years before the advent of Christianity and over 1,200 years before the advent of Islam. Bearing all these connotations in mind, Zion came to mean the Jewish homeland, symbolic of Judaism, of Jewish national aspirations. Every Jew praying to his God wherever he is in the world faces towards Jerusalem. These prayers have expressed for over 2,000 years of exile the yearning of the Jewish people to return to their ancient homeland, Israel. In fact, a continuous Jewish presence in larger or smaller numbers has been maintained in the country over the centuries. Zionism is the name of the national movement of the Jewish people and is the modern expression of the ancient Jewish heritage. The Zionist ideal, as set out in the Bible, has been and is an integral part of the Jewish religion. Zionism is to the Jewish people what the liberation movements of Africa and Asia have been to their own people. Zionism is one of the most stirring and constructive national movements in human history. Historically, it is based on a unique and unbroken connection, extending some 4,000 years between the people of the book and the land of the Bible. In modern times, in the late 19th century, spurred by the twin forces of anti-Semitic persecution and of nationalism, the Jewish people organized the Zionist movement in order to transform their dream into reality. Zionism as a political movement was the revolt of an oppressed nation against the depredations and the wicked discrimination and oppression of the countries in which Zionism flourished. It is indeed no coincidence at all, and not surprising, that the co-sponsors and supporters of this resolution include countries who are guilty of the horrible crime of anti-Semitism and discrimination to this very day. Support for the aim of Zionism was written into the League of Nations mandate for Palestine and was again endorsed by the United Nations in 1947 when the General Assembly voted by overwhelming majority for the restoration of Jewish independence in our ancient land. The re-establishment of Jewish independence in Israel, after centuries of struggle to overcome foreign conquest and exile, is a vindication of the fundamental concepts of the equality of nations and of self-determination. To question the Jewish people's right to national existence and freedom is not only to deny to the Jewish people the right accorded to every other people on this globe, but is also to deny the central precepts of the United Nations. For Zionism is nothing more and nothing less than the Jewish people's sense of origin and destination in the land linked eternally with his name. It is also the instrument whereby the Jewish nation seeks an authentic fulfillment of itself. And the drama enacted in the region, in which the Arab nation has realized its sovereignty in 20 states, comprising 100 million people in 4.5 square million miles with vast resources. The issue, therefore, is not whether the world will come to terms with Arab nationalism. The question is at what point Arab nationalism, with its prodigious glut of advantage, wealth, and opportunity, will come to terms with the modest but equal rights of another Middle Eastern nation to pursue its life in security and peace. The vicious diatribes on Zionism, voiced here by Arab delegates, may give this assembly the wrong impression that while the rest of the world supported the Jewish National Liberation Movement, the Arab world was always hostile to Zionism. This is not the case. Arab leaders, cognizant of the rights of the Jewish people, fully endorsed the virtues of Zionism. Sharif Hussein, the leader of the Arab world during the First World War, welcomed the return of the Jews to Palestine. His son, Emir Faisal, who represented the Arab world in the Paris Peace Conference, had this to say about Zionism on the 3rd of March 1919, and I quote, "We Arabs, especially the educated amongst us, look with deepest sympathy on the Zionist movement. We will wish the Jews a hearty welcome home. We are working together for a reformed and revised Near East, and with our two movements complement one another. The movement is national and not imperialistic. There is room in Syria for us both. Indeed, I think that neither can be a success without the other," unquote. It is perhaps pertinent at this point to recall that in 1947, when the question of Palestine was being debated in the United Nations, the Soviet Union strongly supported the Jewish independence struggle. It is particularly relevant to recall some of Mr. Andrei Gromyko's remarks on May the 14th, 1947, one day before our independence. And I quote, "As we know, the aspirations of a considerable part of the Jewish people are linked with the problem of Palestine and of its future administration. This fact scarcely requires proof. During the last war, the Jewish people underwent exceptional sorrow and suffering. Without any exaggeration, this sorrow and suffering are indescribable. It is difficult to express them in dry statistics on the Jewish victims of the fascist aggressors. The Jews in the territories where the Hitlerites held sway were subjected to almost complete physical annihilation. The total number of Jews who perished at the hands of the Nazi executioners is estimated at approximately 6 million. The United Nations cannot and must not regard this situation with indifference, and since this would be incompatible with the high principles proclaimed in its charter, which provides for the defense of human rights irrespective of race, religion, or sex. The fact that no Western European state has been able to ensure the defense of the elementary rights of the Jewish people, and to safeguard it against the violence of the fascist executioners, explains the aspirations of the Jews to establish their own state. It would be unjust not to take this into consideration and to deny the right of the Jewish people to realize this aspiration." They were the words of Mr. Andrei Gromyko at the General Assembly session on the 14th of May, 1947. How sad it is to see here a group of nations many of whom have but recently freed themselves from colonial rule, deriding one of the most noble liberation movements of this century, a movement which not only gave an example of encouragement and determination to the people struggling for independence, but also actively aided many of them during the period of preparation for their independence or immediately thereafter. Here you have a movement which is the embodiment of a unique pioneering spirit, of the dignity of labor, and of enduring human values, a movement which has presented to the world an example of social equality and open democracy being associated in this resolution with abhorrent political concepts. We in Israel have endeavored to create a society which strives to implement the highest ideals of society, political, social, and cultural, for all the inhabitants of Israel, irrespective of religious belief, race, or sex. Show me another pluralistic society in this world in which, despite all the difficult problems under which we live, Jew and Arab live together with such a degree of harmony, in which the dignity and rights of man are observed before the law, in which no death sentence is applied, in which freedom of speech, of movement, of thought, of expression are guaranteed, in which even movements which are opposed to our national aims are represented in our parliament. The Arab delegates talk of racism. It lies not in their mouths. What has happened to the 800,000 Jews who lived for over 2,000 years in the Arab lands, who formed some of the most ancient communities long before the advent of Islam? Where are those communities? What happened to the people? What happened to their property? The Jews were once one of the most important communities in the countries of the Middle East, the leaders of thought, of commerce, of medical science. Where are they in Arab society today? You dare talk of racism when I can point with pride to the Arab ministers who have served in my government, to the Arab deputy speaker of my parliament, to Arab officers and men serving of their own volition in our defense, border, and police forces, frequently commanding Jewish troops, to the hundreds of thousands of Arabs from all over the Middle East crowding the cities of Israel every year, to the thousands of Arabs from all over the Middle East coming for medical treatment to Israel, to the peaceful coexistence which has developed, to the fact that Arabic is an official language in Israel on a par with Hebrew, to the fact that it is as natural for an Arab to serve in public office in Israel as it is incongruous to think of a Jew serving in any public office in any Arab country, indeed being admitted to many of them. Is that racism? It is not. That, Mr. President, is Zionism. It is our attempt to build a society, imperfect though it may be, and what society is perfect, in which the visions of the prophets of Israel will be realized. I know that we have problems. I know that many disagree with our government's policies. Many in Israel, too, disagree from time to time with the government's policies and are free to do so because Zionism has created the first and only real democratic state in a part of the world that never really knew democracy and freedom of speech. This malicious resolution, designed to divert us from its true purpose, is part of a dangerous anti-Semitic idiom which is being insinuated into every public debate by those who have sworn to block the current move towards accommodation and ultimately towards peace in the Middle East. This, together with similar moves, is designed to sabotage the efforts of the Geneva Conference for Peace in the Middle East and to deflect those who are moving along the road towards peace from their purpose. But they will not succeed, for I can but reiterate my government's policy to make every move in the direction towards peace based on compromise. Mr. President, we are seeing here today but another manifestation of the bitter, anti-Semitic, anti-Jewish hatred which animates Arab society. Who would have believed that in the year 1975, the malicious falsehoods of the elders of Zion would be distributed officially by Arab governments? Who would have believed that we would today contemplate an Arab society which teaches the vilest anti-Jewish hate in the kindergartens? Who would have believed that an Arab head of state would feel obliged to indulge publicly in anti-Semitism of the cheapest nature when visiting a friendly nation. We are being attacked by a society which is motivated by the most extreme form of racism known in the world today. This is the racism which was expressed so succinctly in the words of the leader of the PLO, Yasser Arafat, in his opening address at a symposium in Tripoli, Libya, and I quote, "There will be no presence in this region except for the Arab presence," unquote. In other words, in the Middle East, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Persian Gulf, only one presence is allowed, and that is the Arab presence. No other people, regardless of how deep are its roots in the region, is to be permitted to enjoy its rights of self-determination. Look at the tragic fate of the Kurds in Iraq. Look what happened to the black population in southern Sudan. Look at the dire peril in which an entire community of Christians finds itself in the Lebanon. Look at the avowed policy of the PLO, which calls in its Palestine covenant for the destruction of the State of Israel, which denies any form of compromise on the Palestine issue, and which, in the words of its representative, only the other day in this building, considers Tel Aviv to be occupied territory. Look at all this, and you see before you the root cause before you, 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 the root resolution brought before this assembly. You see the twin evils of this world at work, the blind hatred of the Arab proponents of this resolution, and the abysmal ignorance and wickedness of those who support them. Mr. President, the issue before this assembly is not Israel and not Zionism. The issue is the fate of this organization, conceived in the spirit of the prophets of Israel, born out of an anti-Nazi alliance after the tragedy of World War II. It has degenerated into a forum which was this last week described by one of the leading writers in a foremost organ of social and liberal thought in the West as, and I quote, "rapidly becoming one of the most corrupt and corrupting creations in the whole history of human institutions. Almost without exception, those in the majority come from states notable for racist oppression of every conceivable hue." He goes on to explain the phenomenon of this debate, and I quote, "Israel is a social democracy, the nearest approach to a free socialist state in this world. Its people and government have a profound respect for human life, so passionate indeed that despite every conceivable provocation, they have refused for a quarter of a century to execute a single captured terrorist. They also have an ancient but vigorous culture and a flourishing technology. The combination of national qualities they have assembled in their brief experience as a state is a perpetual and embittering reproach to most of the new countries whose representatives swagger about the UN building. So Israel is envied and hated, and efforts are made to destroy her. The extermination of the Israelis has long been the prime objective of the Terrorist International. They calculate that if they can break Israel, then all the rest of his civilization is vulnerable to their assaults." And then he goes on to conclude, "The melancholy truth, I fear, is that the candles of civilization are burning low. The world is increasingly governed not so much by capitalism or communism or social democracy or even tribal barbarism, as by a false lexicon of political clichés accumulated over half a century and now assuming a kind of degenerate sacerdotal authority. We all know what they are." End of quote. Mr. President, over the centuries, it has fallen to the lot of my people to be the testing agent of human decency, the touchstone of civilization, the crucible in which enduring human values are to be tested. A nation's level of humanity could invariably be judged by its behavior towards its Jewish population. It always began with the Jews, but never ended with them. The anti-Jewish pogroms in Tsarist Russia were but the tip of the iceberg which revealed the inherent rottenness of the regime, which was soon to disappear in the storm of revolution. The anti-Semitic excesses of the Nazis merely foreshadowed the catastrophe which was to befall mankind in Europe. This wicked resolution must sound the alarm for all decent people in the world. The Jewish people, as a testing agent, has unfortunately never erred. The implications inherent in this shameful move are terrifying indeed. Mr. President, on this issue, the world, as represented in this hall, has divided itself into good and bad, decent and evil, human and debase. We, the Jewish people, will recall in history our gratitude to those nations who stood up and were counted and who refused to support this wicked proposition. I know that this episode will have strengthened the forces of freedom and decency in this world and will have fortified them in their resolve to strengthen the ideals they so value. I know that this episode will have strengthened Zionism as it has weakened the United Nations. Mr. President, as I stand on this rostrum, the long and proud history of my people unravels itself before my inward eye. I see the oppressors of our people over the ages as they pass one after another in evil procession into oblivion. I stand here before you as the representative of a strong and flourishing people which has survived them all and which will survive this shameful exhibition and the proponents of this resolution. I stand here as the representative of a people, one of whose prophets gave to this world the sublime prophecy which animated the founders of this world organization and which graces the entrance to this building: nation shall not lift up sword against nation, nor shall they learn war any more. 3 verses before this, the prophet Isaiah proclaimed, and I quoted in the Hebrew original, Vaya be'achrit hayamim ki mitzion teitze Torah udvar Hashem Yerushalayim. And it shall come to pass in the end of the days, for out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. Mr. President, as I stand on this rostrum, the great moments of Jewish history come to mind as I face you, once again outnumbered and the would-be victim of hate, ignorance, and evil. I look back on those great moments. I recall the greatness of a nation which I have the honor to represent in this forum. I am mindful at this moment of the Jewish people throughout the world, wherever they may be it in freedom or in slavery, whose prayers and thoughts are with me at this moment. Mr. President, I stand not here as a supplicant. Vote as your moral conscience dictates to you, for the issue is not Israel or Zionism. The issue is the continued existence of this organization, which has been dragged to its lowest point of discredit by a coalition of despotisms and racists. The vote of each delegation will record in history its country's stand on anti-Semitic racism and anti-Judaism. You yourselves bear the responsibility for your stand before history, for as such will you be viewed in history. But we, the Jewish people, will not forget. For us, the Jewish people, this is but a passing episode in a rich and event-filled history. We put our trust in our providence, in our faith and beliefs, in our time-hallowed tradition, in our striving for social advance and human values, and in our people wherever they may be. For us, the Jewish people, this resolution based on hatred, falsehood, and arrogance is devoid of any moral or legal value. For us, the Jewish people, this is no more than a piece of paper, and we shall treat it as such. Thank you, Mr. President.